As Zimbabwe's new leader takes office, we get the view from its biggest financial backer, China. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. In Zimbabwe, Emmerson Mnangagwa has been sworn in as the new president. It's hoped he'll usher economic change after 37 years of mismanagement by Robert Mugabe. This man told the BBC why he's celebrating.
For the past 28 years, I've only known one president. So this is a new dawn for me. This is a great moment that I have to witness the incoming of the new president. It was not easy to live in the era of Mugabe. We never experienced democracy. We never experienced freedom. We only experienced unemployment. So the coming in of the new president, I feel like everyone is here, is waiting to see great change.
Zimbabwe has been globally isolated, but China still has huge economic and political influence. Hannah Ryder is a British Kenyan economist who runs her own consultancy in China. She told me more about the new leader's ties to Beijing.
Well, he is well known to China. He did train here back in the 70s and he visited China as Speaker of the Parliament back in 2011. So he is well known to China. He's a good friend. At the same time, Mugabe was also a good friend. You know, Mugabe came to China very often over his 37 years in rule. So if Mnangagwa stays in power, that will be a continued close relationship.
Do we know what sort of influence or say Beijing has had in the events that we're seeing today?
China traditionally has a policy of non-interference in the political affairs of other countries. But obviously, China has had a pretty strong relationship and it has maintained over the years while Zimbabwe has been put on the side by others. So from the beginning, Zimbabwe and China were very good friends. But Zimbabwe at the same time, back in the 1980s, was also the darling of the West, right? However, over time, what has happened is that China has maintained its support for Zimbabwe despite the political problems. And so year on year, money has continued to go into Zimbabwe and they have maintained an economic relationship.
Going forward, what is China's strategic interest in Zimbabwe?
Well, I think what China wants is actual stability in the country, because at the moment there's around 90 companies operating in Zimbabwe. They have a fairly large stock of foreign direct investment of around almost $7 billion in Zimbabwe. So they really would like to have stability so that the economics can work even better. Zimbabwe actually signed an MOU with China on the Belt and Road Initiative. So what China will be wanting is continued endorsement, really, of this Belt and Road Initiative from the new leaders and a continued economic relationship and hopefully an even stronger one at that point.
Hannah Ryder, let's do the numbers. Markets in Asia and Europe are mixed. Hong Kong's Hang Seng is up 158 points or 0.5%. In London, the FTSE is down 20 points or a quarter of a percent. Now, Black Friday is upon us. And while it's the busiest shopping day for retailers in the US and increasingly across Europe, in Germany and Italy, workers at big Amazon warehouses are striking to protest pay and conditions. The BBC's David Willey reports from Rome.
Amazon is growing fast in Italy. It employs 2,000 full-time and another 2,000 part-time workers at its massive new warehouse at Piacenza in northern Italy. Labour unions are demanding higher pay and less stressful working conditions. Black Friday is a new concept here in Italy, but according to business experts, 14 million Italians are already planning to make discounted purchases this weekend. In Rome, I'm the BBC's David Willey for Marketplace.
It's 3 weeks since Saudi elites, including 11 princes, were put in detention in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Riyadh, the kingdom's most palatial luxury hotel. The arrests were part of an anti-corruption drive by the new crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman. The BBC's Lise Doucette is the first journalist to be allowed inside by authorities, and she's been telling me more.
Who rounds up more than 200 of not just leading princes, at least 11 princes, their cousins, the wealthiest, most high-profile businessmen in the country, government ministers, and then detains them in the most palatial five-star plus luxury hotels and basically tells them you cooperate or you're going to jail. Imagine if you were in charge of conglomerates around the world. Let's say you were Prince Al-Walid bin Talal, with shares in Twitter and Apple, shares in the Four Seasons, a man who basically has the run of the world. Now he is inside a luxury room, and I saw some of the rooms, and he's being told, this is the file we have on you. If we let's sit down, they're calling it a friendly process. Let's sit down and go through these files. This is what we have on you. Call your lawyer. Do you dispute them? If you recognize that you got this through ill-gotten gains, through abuse of power and corruption, just give us the money back and you can leave. It's all finished. If you contest what we believe is substantial evidence, then you can go to court. You can take it to trial and expose yourself to the entire world. So this is where it's at now. And what I'm told is that 95% of those 201 people still left in the hotel, 95% are saying, right, let's make a deal. They don't have their mobile phones, but they have a hotline and they're going through the files billion by billion and deciding what they will give back and what not.
So if they are able to recover that wealth, where does it go?
Someone said to me that this is the equivalent of discovering a new oil field. There's talk of something like $800 billion in assets they are said to have seized. And the numbers keep changing, but I was told by someone who's on one of the banking committees, 1,900 bank accounts were seized. And those are the bank accounts, not just of the 201 people who are still in the Ritz-Carlton, but their daughters, their sons, their wives, their cousins. You know, you add it all up, that's a heck of a lot of money. So I said to someone from the Anti-Corruption Commission, we met them inside the Ritz-Carlton. I said, how much are you expecting? $800 billion? He said, well, listen, even if it's $200 billion, that's money that belongs to the people of Saudi Arabia.
Lise Doucette, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.